This is a special edition of the RTI Press Pass powered by Rocky Top Insider. Here are your hosts, Jack Foster and Ryan Shumpert.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Jack Foster, joined alongside Ryan Shumpert, as always, here on this Monday afternoon. Going to be recapping the Missouri Series sweep as Tennessee swept the Tigers here in Lindsey Nelson Stadium, their first Thursday through Saturday series of the season. Tennessee took care of business, blowing them out in Game 1 before back-to-back very, very narrow wins to sweep Mizzou, getting revenge from last year's sweep, the other way, as Mizzou swept Tennessee last year in Como. But first, Ryan, before we get into it, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Coming to you guys a little bit earlier this week with, obviously, this past weekend, a Thursday through Saturday series, and then another Thursday through Saturday series next week. So we usually hop in after the midweek game on Tuesday, doing it before this week, and enjoyed the Sunday, a little bit lighter Sunday, and excited to talk a little bit of Tennessee baseball going into another exciting week.
Yeah, Sunday off, and Ryan and I went golfing together. That was fun. We each set the course record, and I think I set the course record, but Ryan would have broke the previous course record, so now It's 1-2. So a really productive day on the golf course for the both of us yesterday. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Besides, the pace of play wasn't great, but other than that, it was a lot of fun. But hey, I guess that's Sunday golf on a beautiful Sunday afternoon.
I think the weather's finally broke too. Like, there's no more of those bad cold days mixed in anymore. It's just smooth sailing from here on out for the next couple months. So excited for that, and excited to hit the links a lot more as we get closer to the summer. But let's dive into this Tennessee baseball series sweep. As I mentioned, Mizzou, one of the worst teams in the conference, so sweep should have been the expectation for Tennessee, given what they've done this season, and that's what they did. But it may have not been how you thought they'd sweep an opponent, because we don't typically see the Vols win 3-2 ball games. We know that their strong suit is their offense and hitting home runs. They went back-to-back games without hitting one home run. That's the first time that's happened this season. And before this series, they had only had two games where they didn't hit a home run. And in both of their 3-2 wins over Mizzou, they did not leave the yard. So, Ryan, how odd was it to see Tennessee win a series like this? But also, it's got to be pretty encouraging to see that Tennessee can eke out these types of games with strong pitching on both games and elite defense, specifically in Game 2.
You're right. And, that's almost why when you – I guess in one sense, it's not – super shocking when you just kind of looked at Missouri coming in. That's why I was real confident Tennessee would sweep. It's just the fact that Missouri's hitting is by far the worst in the SEC, and their pitching is pretty solid. I mean, they haven't just been a terrible team this season. So, you felt like Tennessee's pitching, this would be another good opportunity for them to build off what they've been doing in recent weeks as they continue to improve. But it felt like, yeah, Lindsey Nelson Stadium, Tennessee's offense, even against a pretty good pitching staff, they're going to be able to just mash and score a lot of runs. And they did that on Thursday night, but they really didn't do it the next 2 days. So a quiet weekend from the offense, and it's just exactly what you said. And it echoes the sentiments of, I think, about every, Tony Vitello and every Tennessee player we talked to this weekend of just, yeah, there's a big positive in being able to win these types of games and adding different ways to win to the Rolodex. And I think might have been Kirby Cannell talked about it, kind of having the flow of the game, the vibe of the game had sort of a NCAA tournament feel, just because of the fact that it felt like every pitch was really, really high leverage in games that were that tight and especially low scoring. So that's something I think will be beneficial for this team, especially some of the young guys that haven't played in it. And again, it just feels like Tennessee's pitching staff has steadied a lot. Still some questions, but it's certainly not a massive question. This pitching staff feels plenty, plenty good enough for Tennessee to make it back to the College World Series.
And there's a big question I want to discuss once we kind of wrap up this pitching conversation we're about to dive into, but I'll save that for about 10, 15 minutes into the future. But let's go ahead and talk about the pitching, because it was the strong suit for Tennessee this weekend. AJ Causey continues to look really good coming out of the bullpen. This is a couple weeks now. He's been back in the bullpen role, I think 3 weeks now. And Chris Stamos serving as the opener yet again on Friday. But Kirby Cannell and Aaron Combs continue to provide really, really big innings for Tennessee. Kirby, I think, was, you know, kind of the MVP as far as the pitching staff goes there, maybe on Saturday and Sunday put together. So Kirby Cannell and AJ Causey, you know, get all the praise for Tennessee sweep this weekend. Just kind of talk a little bit about those two arms and how they continue to get better as the season goes along.
Kirby, it felt like, you know, and so at least from a statistical number standpoint, bounced back from what was an important and a solid outing against Kentucky, but an outing where he gave up a lot of runs. And yeah, I mean, I just think you continue to see Kirby be the guy that in the bullpen Tennessee can use in any number of ways. He's the guy that he can do what he's done the last few years. They need to bring him in to get out one lefty. It feels like he's kind of graduated from that role, but if circumstances presented itself, certainly they would use him that way. They would use him in a long relief outing like they did against Kentucky on Sunday last week or 2 weekends ago. Or you see him kind of how they used him this weekend. I know he didn't get the save on Saturday's game, but he came in and pitched till two outs in the ninth inning.
And he should have.
Yeah.
I mean, I get Combs getting the final out, but I mean, there was no reason to take Kirby out. It was just preference, I guess, for Tony. It was kind of the plan, but Kirby definitely could have gotten the final out.
For all intents and purposes, he was the one that closed out that game for Tennessee, and he did the same thing again on Saturday in Game 3 of the series. So he just continues to be the guy Tennessee can use in a bunch of different ways, and Causey continues to – he's just been back to the guy that he was early in the season, really, ever since – you know, obviously he had that 2 week blip where he really struggled against Georgia and Auburn, but he's really bounced back the way you'd want him to since. I'd guess that you'd probably say this has been his best outing since. Six innings pitch, one earned run, six hits, six strikeouts. He was really, really solid, and it's now been 3 weekends he's three straight weeks that he's had good outings since those two bad outings. And in that stretch, let's see if I can find it here. I wrote about Tennessee's pitching earlier today. So yeah, in those three outings, he has given up 5 runs and 17 innings pitched, which is a 2.65 ERA, and struck out 19 batters. So he's just been back to the guy that he was, and it feels like that's just really important, because when you felt worse about Tennessee's pitching this year, it was kind of during that stretch when Causey was struggling, which also kind of went into one of those weekends. Georgia weekend Beam wasn't very good either, but it just feels like he's solidified itself, and it's done a lot to solidify the footing of Tennessee's pitching.
Yeah, and game one against Missouri, 6 innings pitched, 6 hits allowed, but only 1 earned run, struck out 6 while walking 2. AJ Causey continues to cruise, and Kirby Cannell on the weekend did not give up a run, only 2 hits and 3 1/3. And as Ryan mentioned, for all intents and purposes, closed out back-to-back games for Tennessee in those low-scoring affairs, high-leverage moments. Kirby came through, as he's done all season long. And Aaron Combs, you know, not as much. He wasn't used as much this past weekend as he had been the previous 3 weeks, but he did fine out of the bullpen. And Nate Snead, who I want to touch on a little bit more here, this is now back-to-back weeks where Nate Snead hasn't provided a 5-6 inning relief performance where you're like, man, Nate Snead was awesome today, and he didn't necessarily look completely dominant. Tony pulled him pretty early. He didn't pitch Thursday or Friday, so you kind of thought that Nate Snead was going to go pretty long on Saturday. That wasn't the case. I guess Vitello just felt more comfortable going to Kirby or Combs there in that spot, which makes sense. It worked out fine. But Nate Snead, another weekend of him not being used a lot and Tennessee's pitching staff still being able to excel.
Yeah, I think it's twofold. It's the part you just touched on at the end. Tennessee doesn't need Nate Snead as badly as they did earlier in the season. Early in the season, when they didn't have many guys, many arms they could trust, like Tennessee needed 4+ innings from Nate Snead every weekend really to have a chance. And now they have a lot more answers. Causey's gotten back into a rhythm. Kirby has, you know, proved he can go in these longer outings, and then Aaron Combs is the one I'll continue to stay to me the biggest kind of changing factor for Tennessee's bullpen at this point with how dominant he's been the last month of the season. So that's a big part of it. They don't have the push need, but I do think it's fair to say too, he hasn't been his best the last 2 weeks. He obviously had some struggles in the Kentucky series, and I wouldn't even necessarily say he struggled against Missouri this weekend, but he wasn't super crisp. It didn't seem like he was at his best. And I guess that goes to kind of wrap up the whole point of what you were saying. At a weekend where it didn't seem like Snead was at his best, it didn't become a bad outing, or we didn't find out whether it was going to be a bad outing because Tennessee didn't have to push them. They had other arms they could go to. Obviously, Causey had gotten super deep into the game, combined with Stamos, who had a better opening outing on Thursday night. Drew Beam got really deep into the game on Friday night, game two. And then that meant Tennessee had a lot of bullpen guys available for game three on Saturday. So they really didn't have to push that envelope with Snead at all.
Yeah, I don't think anyone does, but it is easy to kind of forget about Drew Beam when he's just Drew Beam on Friday. So don't take that for granted. But 7.1 innings, and you know, it should have been a scoreless outing for Drew Beam. I didn't think he should have come back out in the eighth. He was already at 100 pitches. I just felt like that was the perfect time to just cut it off. You know, like I said, he'd given up zero runs by that point, but he did end up giving up a homer there in the eighth, so he ends the day with having given up 2 earned runs and 6 hits and 7 1/3. 8 Ks on the night. Drew Beam was great, and I don't want to gloss over that because those kinds of outings really allow Tennessee to do what they did with their pitching staff this weekend, because if you eat up that much, then it's much easier to piece together the weekend.
Yeah, it really is, and it's just like the reverse of what we said a couple weeks back when Beam and Causey were struggling, where it was like when, you know, Tennessee didn't have a ton of answers, and it's just like every problem issue Tennessee had or question Tennessee had with its pitching staff was magnified when Causey and Beam struggled. And now, you know, Tennessee has some flexibility where I think they'd be fine if one of those guys struggles in a weekend. But certainly it goes the opposite way too. When those guys are really good and when they eat a lot of innings, it just gives Tennessee a lot of flexibility in how they want to handle things to get those limited number of outs the rest of the weekend. And that's how you go through a weekend series where you don't see Andrew Beinke, you don't see Marcus Phillips, two guys that have kind of been on the verge of helping Tennessee out. I know they got Matthew Dallas, I guess, the final out of the Thursday game to kind of get his, you know, dip his toe into the water of SEC play. But it's, you know, it just gives Tennessee a lot of options and makes it a whole lot easier for Tony Vitello and Frank Anderson to manage when you do get those long outings from your starting, your, you know, two. I guess Causey isn't a starting pitcher, but for all intents and purposes, the innings and the pitches they're asking him to eat up every weekend, he basically is.
Yeah, from what we've seen the past couple weeks, it really feels like Tennessee's SEC play pitching staff is pretty solidified as far as the three starters and Beam, Sechrist, and Stamos is an opener, but then you have Causey, Snead, and then the two funky throwers with Cannell and Combs, and then those late-game guys with Phillips and Beinke. Well, Binky's more of a stopgap, I guess, but Phillips a late-game guy. So those names I mentioned kind of feel like Tennessee's guys as far as the pitching staff goes in SEC play moving forward and in big games. Do you get that sentiment that it's kind of just become this group and there's not going to be many other guys that get a lot of opportunities? I know we saw Dallas get the final out there on Thursday, but it was a blowout. So maybe we see that a little bit more and he can work his way into the mix. But those names I mentioned kind of feel solidified as that's the group.
Yeah, I do. I completely agree. In a weekend series, obviously a regional type situation, SEC tournament, first half of the College World Series, which obviously is a regional format too. You might have to go a little bit deeper, but those are the guys you know, I think Tennessee can rely on. And, really, I would say six. I would take Stamos out. Obviously, he's going to be a big part, and he does fit what you said. I would say the other six guys, it feels like every weekend those guys can give Tennessee 3+ innings, you know, 3-4 innings even. And it's not besides Beam, I don't think there's a ton of guys you feel like are super confident that are like, yeah, more times than not, or there's a 50% chance I could get a 7 innings. But it feels like there's a lot of guys that Tennessee feels like they can get 12 to 15 outs for us each time out. And then obviously, you know, Stamos, even though it's an opener, he's starting on Friday nights for Tennessee. So it's hard, you know, you obviously say that they have a level of trust in him too. So it's those 7 guys that feel like the main guys for Tennessee. And where in some senses in the past, it feels like, you know, there's tiers of how many outs that you'd expect them to get for Tennessee every weekend. And obviously I think there is some tiers of trust level, but generally speaking, it feels like any given weekend, those guys could get any number of outs for Tennessee, and it could really vary who is the most used guy for Tennessee.
Yeah. And part of the reason I say that too, and I include Phillips and Beinke, they didn't pitch last weekend. So you're probably wondering, well, how are they in that group? Well, Saturday when we talked to Tony postgame, he was like, Phillips and Binky were ready to go if this game went to extra innings. So he's fully confident in those guys to provide some innings. I don't think Binky would be in that three-inning range. As Ryan said, it's probably those seven. But Phillips, we know what he can do, and Binky's kind of in the Kirby role from last year, I think, where it's a lefty out of the pen, gets you one to three outs a game when he's appearing in the game. So that's kind of how it all plays out for the pitching staff right now, and I think they're in the best rhythm they've been this season as far as a pitching staff goes, and you know they're obviously getting deeper and deeper as the season goes along, which is really good. Brings me to my final question about this pitching staff, Ryan. I think with Tennessee's offense, even if the pitching staff was still struggling like it was earlier in the season, if I asked you, could this be an Omaha team, you'd say yes, just because of how great their offense is and how they hit home runs at such a high rate. But now that you see how this pitching staff is coming together and how many arms they truly have and they can depend on, do you think this is a national championship contending team with how their pitching staff has played as of late?
Well, we've probably talked about this off air a little bit, but we're in lockstep on this. I mean, I said I wrote just probably about less than an hour ago, about Tennessee's pitching. And at the end I said, there's no more questions about whether this pitching is good enough to get to Omaha. It undoubtedly is. The question is, to me, is Tennessee's top-end pitching good enough to win a national championship? I think Tennessee has enough arms, but it feels like Tennessee's, you know, lacking the truly elite guy, the guy that can go take over a game in the College World Series, like Chase Burns could last year, and like who Tennessee's had to face there. The two trips they made to Omaha under Tony, yeah. Andrew Abbott for Virginia, and then Paul Skeens last year. Just elite, elite guys. It doesn't feel like Tennessee has that right now. Drew Beam's really good. I think Nate Snead has that potential. Obviously, he's been a little more shaky, as we discussed. A.J. Russell's the X factor. But even if A.J. Russell comes back and helps his team a lot, I don't think it's going to be in a starting pitching role where he throws 90, 100-plus pitches. So, you know, that's the question mark. I guess I don't really have an answer for your question. You know, I would side with being skeptical that they can win the national championship without the high end level pitching, but I think they have enough pitching depth, and their offense is so good that you know they're probably better set up to make a deeper run in the College World Series than either the 21 or 23 teams were. Obviously, they got to make it there first, but yeah,
it really feels like AJ Russell is that swing guy, and if he comes back and he's just super great out of the bullpen, you know, pumping 98, 99 and can give you 4 to 5 innings, then maybe it will be. Maybe he can be that feared bullpen guy that we kind of talk about, even if he's not in a starting role, because Chase Burns obviously wasn't in a starting role last year. So I think a lot of that is contingent on AJ Russell, and because he could potentially give you 2 to 3 appearances in Omaha, you know, if he's a bullpen guy.
Yeah, 100%, because he's the most talented pitcher on this Tennessee team, and we saw it in, he's pitched, what, like 3 times this year, and, you know, it's, I think everybody who spent the money to get that Flow Sports subscription or was watching, you know, it's burned in their memory how dominant he was against a really good Texas Tech lineup in that season opener, how dominant he was every single time he pitched last year, so it's that aspect of it, and it's the aspect of if you have another arm like that, maybe you can move a Nate Snead, or you can move somebody into this, one of those good right-handed bullpen arms into the starting rotation to give yourself a little bit more pop there. But you're right. That feels like the X factor. And, you know, one thing I will just say, I know we talked about it last week, but he had 2 more solid outings. Now, Aaron Combs, since the Auburn series, which is real when he started to get things going, he's been so, so good. And it's been 5 outings in the last 4 weekends. He's pitched 12 and a third innings. He's allowed 1 earned run, 0.73 ERA. He struck out 18 batters. He's walked 4. 3 of those 4 walks were in the Auburn game. So really in his last 3 weekends, he has just 1 walk. He's been dominant. He's been Tennessee's best pitcher over these last 4 weekends, in my opinion. And I'll continue to say I think he's changed the dynamic for that Tennessee pitching staff more than anybody else in this last month.
Aaron Combs, best walk-up song on the team, Blind Corn. Had Aerials. I do like Aerials, but System of a Down. Of course, Ryan, you don't know any of these songs, but no. Aerials, System of a Down was better, I think, and that was the song last year, but still, Blind by Corn, best walkout song on the team, and I'll stand by that. So Aaron Combs, shout out to the metalhead pitcher on the squad. let's shift gears and talk Tennessee's offense. It was a slow weekend, as I mentioned, when you have back-to-back 3-2 wins. You know, to me, there's not any major takeaways for Tennessee's offense. I thought Cal Stark had a productive weekend, kind of bouncing back from a poor showing in Lexington, had the homer on Thursday and had a couple of, I believe he had a hit on Saturday. So he provided some good moments for Tennessee at the plate. Christian Moore continues to rake, hit over 500 on the series. Pretty much everyone else struggled a little bit outside of Billy Amick and Christian Moore, but Christian Moore is just, you know, still on another planet as he continues his stellar season. 6 of 11 at the plate, added another home run to his total. He's 3 ahead of Blake Burke for the program record. So Christian Moore and Billy Amick were the big catalyst for Tennessee at the plate this weekend.
They were, and I think I've said a couple times, you know, Christian Moore, it felt like just like a stretch or a weekend or maybe 2 weekends where he just gets on these unbelievable tears because he'd done that last year. But, you know, it's 3 straight weekends now that he's just been otherworldly at the plate. And that's almost a third of SEC play. So that's past just like, oh, what a stretch. I mean, he's maintaining it right now. And obviously it wasn't like we were acting like he hadn't been good otherwise, but it's just been an extended stretch of incredible play for him. And yeah, Billy Amick did some good things. I really think, you know, you kind of look at, we've talked all season about the top five for Tennessee being so good and, you know, as good as probably any in the country. What is that next group? What can that 6-9 be? Maybe that changes the ceiling for Tennessee's offense. I thought it was a pretty good weekend for that group. I thought Cal Stark was good at the plate. And then Dean Curley was really, really good. I mean, yeah, I thought it was one of his better weekends of SEC play. 3-10 at the plate, worked a couple walks. It just felt like he had good at bats and then he played good defense too.
Had that 2-run single on Saturday, right? Which was huge for the game.
Yeah, you're right. It was. So to me, it felt like one of his better weekends. And he's been stuck on 9 home runs for a while, but it almost feels like I like where he's at more now than early in the season when it was very much home run or bust for him. The fact that he's doing it and showing some consistency against SEC pitching is a good sign. And it wasn't just a huge weekend for Hunter Inslee by any means, but I thought he had some good at-bats, hit a home run, you know, had a 333 on base percentage, you know, did some good things and was, you know, a little more steady after a bad weekend for him at Kentucky.
Yeah, I totally agree about Dean Curley. I do think he's in a much better spot than he was, say, a month and a half ago. And he's really rounded into form and defensively made some great plays, specifically on that Friday game. I mean, I know you were occupied Friday night, so I don't know how much you got to watch, but to me, that was probably the best game Tennessee's defense has had collectively. I mean, Blake Burke made some great plays. Cal Stark was money behind the plate. I believe Hunter Inslee made a couple great catches in center. Dean Curley with the jumping grab there in shortstop. There was Kavaris Tears perfectly executing a 9-3 double play with a diving catch and then firing a throw to Burke. And he also made a great throw to keep a runner at third. And then Cal Stark picks off the guy at first to get Causey out of the bases loaded jam there. Drew Beam out of the bases loaded jam there. Just saying, that was probably the best game Tennessee's defense has had as a whole this season. And, you know, as Tony said multiple times, winning in different ways, I think defense was the reason they won on Friday.
Yeah, I was Ben McKee and I had the game on his phone at Mike Wilson's wedding on Friday night. So it was following. The only play I saw live was the Cal Stark throw behind to get out of, what was that, the seventh inning, I think, when that happened?
It was a little bit earlier, I think fourth inning.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a little bit early, but still.
Way often, yeah. but fine. I've seen all the other plays besides the KT diving catch, which now I didn't even know it was a double play, so I need to go find that. But yeah, I mean, we've talked about it. The defense is just like the sneakily better, you know, sneaky area where this team has most improved this season, it feels like. And you know, even you go back to the second game in a season, obviously they lost to Oklahoma. And I think my memory's right again. That was another one I didn't watch a ton because basketball that night, maybe Dreiling had a ball he could have potentially gotten to in that big 10th inning. But the defense was really good behind Drew Beam that night. And it just feels like they've been really solid all season. And Cal Stark felt like he had a great weekend at the plate. And going back to that, you know, pickoff attempt, throw behind a runner at first base to get out of the inning leads me to complimenting Tennessee. one of what felt like a mini, what in the world is Missouri doing?
Oh, yeah. Can we just talk about how terrible Missouri's base running is? It was awful Saturday. That was the worst game they had base running wise, but it was bad all weekend.
Yeah. I mean, it's like that situation. How are you getting – the bases are loaded with two outs. How are you getting picked off from the catcher at first base? Like, that just can't happen. And again, there were multiple of those moments on Saturday, and it's like – it felt a little bit like watching Tennessee last year, early in the season or the first half of the season, where it's like your offense isn't that great. You cannot be afford to be giving outs away on the base pass. And that is just maddening to watch. And I'm sure, you know, the Missouri fans, the big Missouri baseball fans felt that way. Because to me, honestly, Saturday's game, it felt like Missouri was the better team, or they played better. Maybe not the better team, but they played better. They should have won that game. But all the base running mistakes, they just ran themselves out of innings. And Tennessee did a good job of capitalizing on those outs. I guess besides the one, Christian Moore had a bad throw home on a cutoff attempt on a double in the gap. So you give Tennessee credit for just making the routine plays, making the smart plays. But man, it was, yeah, like you said, what in the world was Missouri doing?
Yeah, when Cal threw behind the runner there to get out of the bases with a jam, I remember it wasn't even like a swift tag for Burke. You know, a lot of pickoffs, it's Burke catches it, tags, and it's bang, bang. This one, he waited for the runner to come back. He had already caught it, and he was just staring at it. It was over. I mean, it was like a second and a half. He had the ball in his glove, was waiting for the runner to come back so he could tag him. It was awful. And I go back to the play on Saturday where Dean Curley, they were playing deep, and he made a pretty good stop in shallow center there, then fires the throw home because it was a horrible send. And that was another one where it was just so easy to get the out there. And yeah, Ryan's right. I do think that Missouri probably should have won Saturday's game, but their base running errors were just so ugly. But it's part of it. I guess that's why you're 6-15 in league play. You know, it's just mistakes like that. So Tennessee took advantage. Kudos to the defense on the weekend. Felt like I needed to shout that out. A couple more notes. Blake Burke, not by far his worst weekend at the plate. Hit streak came to an end on Friday night. I believe, was it Thursday night? Thursday night it came to an end.
Yep.
31 games it ends, so that's obviously the Tennessee record. He broke it a couple of games ago. Condridge Holloway's previous record was at 27 games, so shout out to Blake Burke for a tremendous stretch there with a 31-game hit streak and 38 on base game on base streak. But, you know, only had one hit on the weekend. Did come in Saturday, so he's... it's not like he went, you know, three straight games hitless. So obviously Blake Burke's great, but was the worst Tennessee starter at the plate this weekend. So that's something to monitor moving forward. Dylan Dreiling too, not the best weekend at the plate, but this is going to happen. It's baseball. So we know what this Tennessee offense can do. And Ryan, there's no worries here, right?
No, definitely not. And you know, it was just kind of uncharacteristic stuff from Burke. It was, I think Tony said that after Thursday night with some of his bats, you know, it was just really, really confusing or something to that extent. I can't remember exactly what he said. But yeah, no worries there. You know, he's been so good for the vast majority of the season that I expect him to fully bounce back and have a really good week this week. And then, yeah, Dreiling, I mean, even in a week that certainly wasn't great for him, a lot of strikeouts, he did walk three times. So got on base four times over the course of three games. So, you know, the one guy that maybe point to too of more of a worry is just another 0-for-4 week for Dalton Bargo. I mean, I think he's in the midst of what, something like an 0-13, 0-14 stretch in SEC play. Certainly a really talented hitter who Tennessee needs to try to find needs to be able to get his groove back as they continue to work through conference play.
Yeah, I was trying to find Dalton Bargo. Yeah, he's 0-4-6-8. He's 0-for-8. 10-13. He's on an 0-for-13 slump in SEC play. So is that what you said, 0-for-13?
I said something in that ballpark.
Something like that. But yeah.
I didn't know exactly what it was. Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, 0-for-13 slump in SEC play. So maybe he can get going this weekend at Florida. Did want to mention something real quick on Dylan Dreiling. Obviously not his best weekend, but in a close game, these moments matter. In the bottom of the fourth on Friday's game, the game two win, he had a great at-bat, then singled and used great – oh, he legged out an infield single, excuse me, and then used great speed to get to third and then scored on a wild pitch later. So You know, he ran the bases really well, used his speed really well, and probably wouldn't have scored there if it weren't for his speed in that inning. And in a one-run game, those moments matter a lot. So that was probably a big Dylan Dreiling highlight that maybe not a lot of people will think about on the weekend. Looking ahead to this weekend, Ryan, it's another Thursday through Saturday series, so not going to say Friday night this time around when talking about game one, promise. But they're going to Gainesville. It's on the road. Tennessee's been pretty solid on the road. They weren't last year, but they've definitely been solid on the road this year. Florida, we know they were the runners-up last season. They're not as good this year. Just the pitching hasn't been as strong, but we know they have one of the best players in the country in Jack Caglione. What are some storylines you're looking for in this Tennessee at Florida series this weekend in Gainesville?
Yeah, I think it's one, does the offense return to form the way you'd expect against a pitching staff that's kind of weak? And I expect that it will. And then I think it's two, just does Tennessee mix up the pitching rotation? I mean, I feel like that's going to be a conversation just about every week. Did it continue to roll with the same formula? And then does it get a little bit more expanded out of the bullpen? Does Tennessee give some guys some extra opportunities? And then I guess specifically just Nate Snead, what does he look like? It's two straight shakier weekends. Again, I don't even necessarily want to call this past weekend bad, because I don't think that would be fair. He didn't give up a run, but just wasn't at his best. So continue to see, yeah. continue to rack up wins. And you know, you kind of start to look at it, and Tennessee slowly but surely is becoming a real, you know, at least an outside chance to win the SEC here in the regular season, especially the SEC East. Is Kentucky had another bad weekend this past weekend, and they have one against Arkansas this coming up weekend. So that's kind of the more big picture stuff. But on the field, it's kind of looking for the pieces that have struggled a little bit of late with the hitting this past weekend, and then Snead, who obviously is about as talented as any pitcher Tennessee has. Can he get back into the groove that he was earlier in the season?
Yeah, you mentioned standings entering that Tennessee at Kentucky series. Tennessee, I believe, was 10-5 in league play. Kentucky 14-1. Fast forward 2 weekends later, Kentucky is 16-5. Tennessee 15-6, only one game behind now after Mississippi State beat Kentucky last week. Was that the team that beat them?
It was South Carolina. South Carolina. Mississippi State beat Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt, correct. And now Vandy is 4 games behind Tennessee in the standings. So a couple big series went the ball's way last weekend as far as standings go. But Florida, you know, 9-12 in league play. Their worst weekend was early April when the team that just got swept by Tennessee, Missouri, swept them in Como. So Florida's had an up and down season. As I mentioned, definitely not as good as they were last year. Coming off a series loss at Arkansas, did take one game in the finale, but you know, this Florida team can't be slept on by any stretch of the imagination. They still have a lot of talent. But what do you think the expectation should be for Tennessee this weekend in Gainesville?
To win the series, to take 2 out of 3. I think Tennessee's a better team. Tennessee's playing really well right now. I mean, Tennessee's really, at least it feels quiet. Maybe it's not that quiet, but they've won 10 out of their last 11 SEC games. So I think they should win this series. You know, I'd look for what Tennessee can do against Florida starters. Can they get those Florida starters out of the game early? Because I think they're fully capable of doing that, kind of do what they did on Saturday at Kentucky. Because if they do that, I think they'll definitely win the series, because the pitching depth for Florida is just so, so lackluster. And right. If they can do that, then get to the bullpen, all of a sudden I think you're looking at, you know, a sweep very much being in play and being a possibility.
Before the Florida series is the Lipscomb Midweeker on Tuesday night in Lindsey Nelson Stadium at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Lipscomb, a pretty good baseball program last couple of seasons, have played Tennessee tough. So it's not like I wouldn't expect a 20-0 win on Tuesday night, but who knows? It is a midweek. But Lipscomb has been pretty competitive last couple of seasons. Of course, that game will be on SEC Network Plus, but you can follow along on RockyTopInsider.com, the live update thread I do each and every game. It's great. It's got a lot of information, at-bat by at-bat thread, everything you could possibly know about the game. This weekend, as far as TV goes for the Florida series, the first game will be televised on Thursday night. That's ESPN2, so, you know, easy access there. The last two games will be on SEC Network Plus. Ryan, if you don't have anything else to add, I'm going to wrap up here.
One last note on the past weekend, and maybe you said it and I just missed it, but Cannon Peebles finally got that first Tennessee home run.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, got to mention that. And how about the dugout going crazy? I mean, a big storyline, I feel like, for this team has been how close they are and just how well they gelled so early. So seeing the dugout go crazy like that for Kenan Peoples hitting his first home run is something that was kind of special that night.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And then Tony talked about it, about, you know, it was talking about how hard Cannon works, and was talking about the night before the series Wednesday, how KT and Cannon were, you know, hitting at 10:30 at night. And, you know, I think everybody was going crazy when Cannon hit that home run. But I thought that was kind of a cool shout out when you look back at the past week at Kentucky, when Cannon came in and had, you know, a pinch hit sack fly, and, you know, Kavaris Tears, I think he was scored on it, you know, mob Cannon Peoples, like he just hit a walk off in game three of the College World Series. So it was kind of cool. That felt like a little bit of a full circle moment of KT being one of those guys. Like you said, this whole team's very close. I'm sure everybody has been in Cannon's corner, but KT being a dude that's been putting in a lot of work with them, just the excitement he had seeing Cannon have success, even when it was just kind of minor success, and then the success that, or the joy that the whole team and excitement that the whole team had when Cannon finally got that monkey off his back and hit his first career or first Tennessee homer on Thursday.
Yeah, we'll see if Cannon can use that homer to parlay into some success here on Tuesday night against Lipscomb, as I would imagine he gets the start behind the plate in the midweek. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Rocky Top Insider Baseball Press Pass podcast. I'm Jack Foster. I'm at Jack Foster Media on all social media. That's Ryan. He's at rshump00. That's S-C-H-U-M-P. You can also follow Rocky Top Insider at Rocky Top Insider. And as I mentioned, RockyTopInsider.com for all your UT athletics coverage, whether it's NFL draft, basketball transfers, baseball season, you name it. We got it all over at RockyTopInsider.com. But for Ryan, I'm Jack, and we'll see you next time.